These are the stories you should know about today. It turns out the United States, CIA really, has been sending Starlink systems to Iranian protesters, terminals. Could you imagine if Iran was doing that with agents placed inside the United States? Does Trump really want to go to war with Iran? You see, I don't think so. Ask me this question now. Does Netanyahu want Trump to go to war with Iran? I think so. And what's he doing about it? We've got that here on The Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. I want to tell you about something called the National Endowment for Democracy, because this is an organization that's kind of one of those NGOs that really is a front for an organization with ties to the CIA. And for years, they've gone all over the world, and they go into places, and they put agents or infiltrators in there, and they have governments they don't like removed, and then they put in people they do like as the new government in these countries. They've been doing this for decades, right? Well, here's the newest information about this National Endowment for Democracy. There is reporting that they have taken some 6,000 Starlink terminals. That's like a communication system to bypass the internet so that agitators inside of Iran and protesters inside of Iran can communicate with themselves, with the outside world, perhaps with agents inside the United States. I mean, think about if that were the other way around. Think if Iran had people inside the United States, agents who were they were trying to get them to overthrow the Trump administration. Well, here's a guy on a report that you're about to watch bragging about doing this. He's in Los Angeles. Take a listen.
Mehdi Yayanejad, now he is an Iranian digital rights and democracy activist. He joins us from Los Angeles. Welcome to you. As I understand, you've previously been involved in efforts to send Starlink user terminals to activists and citizen journalists in Iran. Could you tell us why is Starlink so important for Iranian protesters right now?
As you mentioned, we've been involved in sending Starlinks to Iranian activists and citizen journalists in Iran.
What's interesting about this is this story about this. Again, let me go back to what I posed a moment ago. Imagine if the shoe were on the other foot. Imagine if it was Iranian government agents inside or agitators inside the United States who Iran wanted them to help overthrow the Trump administration, and they gave them communication systems to secretly talk to themselves and others and Iranian agents, I suppose. Could you imagine what that story would be on CNN, the New York Times, on the neocon network, Fox News? Could you imagine? Because this story they're basically ignoring, but that story would be front page for months. And the story they tell now is Iran bad. Iran is hurting people. Iran is a terrorist country. Iran is evil. Iran is killing its own people. These are the only stories that you get out of the press. So it's what people think in the United States. For example, yesterday we had a debate on this show, and I had Professor Mirandi from Iran, and then I had a politician, wonderful guy named Sergeant Norton from the United States, who was kind enough to come on our show. Take a listen to his perspective. Iraq was bullcrap. It was a made-up story, and we shouldn't have fought that war, and it was wrong.
I wrote a college paper in 2002 that called it bullshit. So, I mean...
Good for you. Yeah, but now you're arguing that if we do the same thing in Iran, it will be okay. Is that what I hear you saying? And tell me, where's the distinction and the difference?
Why? To these terrorist groups in the Middle East while we fought the war on terrorism. So I absolutely believe Iran is a threat. I've seen the equipment.
A threat to whom? A threat to whom? To America?
I know where they...
To America? How?
They pushed them up and through Afghanistan, and they also supplied them across into Iraq when we were in Iraq.
Let us suppose that 10 years ago, Iran may have been responsible for some equipment that was used by terrorists in Syria or here or there. I could argue that there are countries all over the world that we could tie certain pieces of hardware that were then used by either drug traffickers or this or that, including our own country, because I know what we did in Latin America. So you're arguing that because of that, we should now bomb Iran. That's the argument?
The argument for bombing is Iran is because they do have a religious theology that's running it, and they do persecute their people. There have been people killed. You've seen it on news agencies around the world. There is more Iranians that sit there and talk about this after they leave Iran. Why would
people
Iranians
leave every
their country?
People who leave every country, sir, talk bad about their countries.
They don't want to go back to it. Are these millions of Iranians, once they have freedom of speech, making this up? Millions of Iranians that have fled
and,
the country?
And people from every country. There's people in China who want us to attack China. There's people in Miami that want us to attack Cuba. There's people in Tampa who want us to attack Venezuela. There's people in Atlanta who want us to attack Argentina. People from all over the world go to different countries and then say how much they hate their countries and ask the country where they are to attack and kill the people of their country. That's the most common thing in the world. It's a species argument. What he is saying, by the way, and he's a good guy, and we really thank him for coming. It was kind of him to come and express his opinion, and I respect it wholeheartedly because he's a victim of this kind of information. What he's saying now about Iran, Americans were told the same damn thing about Iraq, about Vietnam, about Syria. You got to fear the bad guys. They're hurting their own people. We got to go in there. We got to take them out. They've got WMDs. They're going to destroy the world. They're going to attack us. And time again, that's bullcrap. But it's the same story that they're putting out again. By the way, there's one guy who happens to be the Prime Minister of Israel who's been putting this story out to scare Americans for some two decades now. Here's some tape of Bibi Netanyahu going way back.
The two nations that are vying, competing with each other, who will be the first to achieve nuclear weapons, is Iraq and Iran. And Iran, by the way, is also outpacing Iraq in the development of ballistic missile systems that they hope will reach the eastern seaboard of the United States within 15 years.
By next spring, at most, by next summer, at current enrichment rates, they will have finished the medium enrichment and move on to the final stage. From there, it's only a few months, possibly a few weeks, before they get enough enriched uranium for the first bomb.
If not stopped, Iran could produce a nuclear weapon in a very short time. It could be a year, it could be within a few months, less than a year.
It's next week. It's in a few months. It's tomorrow. It should have been yesterday. Maybe it's next year. How long has this guy been saying the same thing? You got to go to war. And he said the same thing about Iraq. By the way, Trump was against the war in Iraq. You should know. You probably do know this. And if you don't know, let me give you a little evidence. Here he is with my friend, because we're both from Florida and we hung around sometimes in the same circles, Jeb Bush. Here's Trump essentially during a debate destroying Jeb Bush. Remember? Low-energy Jeb? Well, here's Trump talking to low-energy Jeb about what his brother did in Iraq.
Obviously, it was a mistake.
So
George Bush made a mistake. We can make mistakes, but that one was a beauty. We should have never been in Iraq. We have destabilized the Middle East.
So here's the question. If Trump has been on the record and was the guy who basically, I was impressed with Trump back then because I love what he was saying. He was one of the first guys, you know, inside the establishment who essentially came out and said the Iraq war was a lie. And by the way, he wasn't just saying it then. I heard him saying this 5 years before that moment. So Trump is a guy who doesn't like wars. Trump is a guy who was against the Iraq war. So why would he now be for the Iran war? Why would Donald Trump, the guy who was anti-war, be wanting to start a war with Iran, a country that's three times the size of Iraq, three times the military hardware of Iraq, three times the population of Iraq, right? Why? Look at this video. This is a video of Bibi Netanyahu arriving in Washington for the seventh time. They blocked the frickin' freeway. They stopped the interstates. This is the road that goes from Reagan to the Capitol. You're going to see the Capitol there in the background, right? Could you imagine people were 2.5, 3 hours late to get home to see their families because the most important man in the world from a tiny little country decided he was going to go talk to the president and just barge into the White House? This is crazy, right? But there he is. So you have to ask yourself, what did he say to Donald Trump, right? And why would BB have so much sway over Donald Trump? What could he possibly have on maybe Donald Trump? Watch this. This just happened. NPR is now reporting that there was something in the Epstein files that's been redacted in the United States. It was taken out. Nobody was allowed to see it. But somehow this has been leaked. Allegations from a 13 or 14-year-old girl. Again, it's alleged in the report. 13 or 14-year-old girl says Trump abused her. And that's contained in the Epstein files, but was redacted, according to NPR. Here is the report so you can see it for yourself.
New NPR investigation reveals the Justice Department withheld portions of the Jeffrey Epstein files that contain allegations involving President Trump, including material tied to claims that Mr. Trump sexually abused a minor and that some pages mentioning him were removed from the public record. Democrats on the House Oversight Committee called that out today, saying the DOJ's withholding of information could amount to a crime.
So then we have to ask ourselves the following question. What kind of information might be out there that perhaps Israel might have? Because if the United States redacts it, fine. The United States redacts it, so they're not letting anybody read it. But is it possible that Israel has the same information? Is it possible that Israel has that same report? And why would Israel have the same report? Maybe because they had ties to Jeffrey Epstein? Maybe because Jeffrey Epstein was working for Israel? Maybe because he had ties to the Mossad? All of that has been reported on already, by the way. It's just that the media in the United States has ignored it because they'd rather talk about the Picayune issues of this guy who did this with this girl, et cetera, et cetera. Not that that's not important. It's sick, right? So what would be an indication, perhaps, that Epstein had connections to Israel? How about the fact that he was caught in a secret recording explaining everything about his sources, including Peter Thiel, to the prime minister and former intel officer from Israel, Ehud Barak? Take a listen.
So he thought that Peter would put you on the board of Palantir. Peter Thiel is one of the best. I've never met him. He's going to come here next week. So I wanted to talk to him after I talked to you. Okay. He and Andreessen, it's called Andreessen Horowitz. Andreessen Horowitz, they pay Larry $1 million a year. Just to advise
them. Andreas and?
Andreessen and Horowitz.
What they are? They're lobbyists. What they are doing?
They are the biggest venture capital people in Silicon Valley.
Well, bigger than Sequoia or Kleiner Perkins?
These are the new Kleiner Perkins. Everybody, these are the smart boys. Mm-hmm. So those two companies right away, in terms of, I said that we need, now, in the next 3 weeks, if you're going to leave.
Can you believe this? So ask yourself, who's Jeffrey Epstein working for? What do you think? So Trump is getting a lot of pressure. He's getting pressure from the crazy neocons who all want to go to war with anybody. They don't care, but Iran will be great. Like Lady Lindsey Graham. I don't know why they call him that. And the members of Congress and the Senate, who are both stupid and generally bought off in the United States. And he's also getting pressure from the media, who generally ignore all the facts, like this guy we had on earlier. Where'd he get his information? CNN, Fox News, right? And they don't tell Americans what a colossal mistake it would be to do this, to attack Iran, how much it would cost them, the American people, in lives, in treasure. So here are the facts. This war would be good for Israel. Israel wants it. Greater Israel, as we heard from Mr. Huckabee. But it wouldn't be good in any way for the United States. It would not. And more importantly, for the people, the average people of the United States, it would be terrible. So I got to bring you up to date on something else that we're following for you now. The third round of Russia-Ukraine talks was supposed to happen today, but at the last minute, we are told it was postponed until next month. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? We don't know at this point. But there have been some news developments that have been coming out that are today. For example, Mr. Trump is telling Mr. Zelensky, you've got till the end of the summer to do this deal, okay? In fact, he gave him 30 days at one point in a 30-minute conversation that they had yesterday. Zelensky says, at least give me till the end of the year. Trump says, no, till the end of the summer. Well, after a short break, we're going to have an exclusive for you. I'm going to be talking to someone who has a lot of experience, Lieutenant Colonel Vasily Prosorov. He worked out of the headquarters of the SBU, that's essentially the Ukrainian Secret Service, and he's going to join me here to tell me what he knows about this situation. We'll be right back. Don't go away. So Mr. Trump told Mr. Zelensky today that he has essentially 30 days to get this thing worked out with the Russians, which is interesting. Mr. Zelensky told Mr. Trump, I need at least till the end of the year. So Mr. Trump said, no, you get till basically the end of the summer. So maybe he has a little bit more time. Meanwhile, Mr. Zelensky's trying to come up with some way of getting some leverage that he can use against the Russians. But just as things could not get worse for Zelensky, well, they just might. Because there's new indications, new utterings, if you would, coming out of Ukraine about more brewing corruption scandals involving the Zelensky government, right? So, you know, last time, as we reported, everybody reported it, and it really hurt him specifically, it was about corruption in the energy sector. But what about all the billions of dollars that have come in from the United States? Hell, hundreds of billions of dollars from the United States taxpayers, from European taxpayers that have been shoveled into Ukraine, right, for its military needs. What's happened to all that money, given the fact that their military is not doing so well at the current level? Well, joining us now to talk about this is Lieutenant Colonel Vasily Prosorov. He worked out of the headquarters of SBU, by the way, which is essentially a Ukrainian secret service, or at least that's what we would refer to it here in the United States. He's now here in Moscow, and he's under, as you might expect, very heavy security protection. Colonel, thank you so much for joining us. It's so great to have you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you for sharing your information with us. I want to start with corruption, because we know what's been going on in the energy sector, but I'm hearing rumblings now that there may be more reports of corruption inside the military apparatus of Ukraine. What can you share with us?
Well, I should start probably the fact that since 2014, corruption probably became the very foundation of the existence of the very state of Ukraine. It's not a crime, it's like the pillar the whole Ukraine rests upon. Corruption permeates all the spheres in the state, from kindergarten catering to atomic energy. So the military sphere had no way but of escaping that, especially after the beginning of a special military operation. And when funds were being pumped into Ukraine, and of course, Ukrainian officials, top-ranking military, started cutting a piece of that pie to line their own pockets. And I should emphasize, it was happening on all levels, from squad commanders to defense ministers, head of the SBU, head of the chiefs of staff. The presidential administration embezzlement was ripe on every level. I was once investigating the stealings of Western armaments pumps into the Ukraine. The supplies had started even before the special military operation. Javelin systems.
Let me ask you a question for a moment based on what you just said, because I'm thinking, I have a picture in my mind of, as I'm listening to you talk, that maybe in some regard, it's not just the fault of the people who are being corrupt, but the people who are corrupting them. I imagine all this money started suddenly flowing into Ukraine, tens of billions of dollars, then hundreds of billions of dollars, coming from Washington, coming from London, coming from Paris, coming from Berlin. It's like they were like kids in a candy store, I imagine. Am I being too kind to them?
Ну, да, ви правильно говорите, но...
Well, you're correct. But you should remember one very serious thing. We can't talk about Ukrainian corruption as purely Ukrainian corruption. In all spheres, they steal Western money, and representatives of the Western state get their cut as well. In all areas,
armament
supplies.
So the money comes in, they put it in their pocket, then they send it out, and the other guys who sent them the money put it in their pockets.
You're absolutely right.
You mean bankers in London, in France, those guys are in on it?
Например.
Just to give you an example, corruption in the energy sphere, I'm not even talking about nuclear energy right now. Let's talk about a corporation like Naftogaz, that's oil and gas, and shovel gas back then, supplies of Russian gas. That was before the special military operation.
Mm-hmm.
The board of directors of Naftogaz included the well-known citizen of the United States of America, Mr. Hochstein, representative of the Democratic Party of the U.S., and he was even advisor on energy security to Biden. So Hochstein stood behind many corruption schemes that saw billions of dollars pumped out of Ukraine into the pockets of Western people.
You know what I think about, though, when you're saying this? You know who I feel bad for? Obviously, I feel bad for the people of Ukraine. The people of Ukraine are good people, right? They're just citizens of any other country. But I feel really bad for the military of Ukraine, because this is money that was, if nothing else, intended to go to them, but they're probably getting a percentage of it for their own equipment and for their own hardware because it's going elsewhere. I wonder if that's the reason they're getting their butts kicked in the front lines.
В том числе, конечно, вы правы, потому что эти деньги могли
бы... Yes, of course you're right. That's one of the reasons, because that money could have gone to pay to the injured or buy new weapons. Because for Russia, it's a good thing that this money never reaches the Ukrainian military. But for the Western taxpayers, of course, it's a wild thing to hear.
It's sad. And I imagine there is corruption directly in the military apparatus as well, right? I've heard stories that people would get equipment, I don't know, equipment that they were supposed to use in Ukraine, but then somehow there were reports that equipment was seen somewhere else in the world, in Africa or in Sudan or in some other place. Like it came in and then they took it out the backside and sold it to another country. Does that happen? Are those reports true as far as you know?
Не то, что бывает. Я видел это своими глазами, когда мы
проводили... Yes, I saw it with my own eyes. ...журналистских расследований. When we were conducting a journalist investigation, we found Javelin and Stinger systems, AT-4 anti-tank missiles. We found them in Syria, owned by Hamas and Hezbollah, terrorist organizations. Moreover, those systems had been supplied to Ukraine because the manuals were in Ukrainian language. And when we unraveled the whole supply chain, it turned out that those weapons had been supplied in 2022 to Ukraine, and the commanders of a unit had simply sold them to Arab terrorist groups. I saw that with my own eyes, and I held them in my arms.
The manuals were in Ukrainian. Sounds to me like a dead giveaway. If those weapons were found in another country, they were intended for Ukraine, but they ended up somewhere else. That means they went to Ukraine and then somebody in Ukraine shipped them out, right?
Wow. И это только один канал, который мы обнаружили.
And that's just one channel that we identified. His weapons trading, smuggling in Ukraine is colossal.
Hmm.
Tons of weapons being sold. They never make it to the Ukrainian military, actually, and those weapons end up owned by terrorist organizations or drug cartels, for example, in Mexico.
Let me ask you about a report that just came out that I reported this yesterday as well. The Russian intelligence is reporting, as you may have heard, that they have information that the French and the Brits are trying to either give some kind of nukes to Mr. Zelensky or making it look like Zelensky has nukes because they want him to have more power, more leverage when he negotiates with the Russians. So let me ask you the first question. Do you have reason to believe that Mr. Zelensky or the Zelensky government or whoever's in Ukraine now has wanted nukes, has tried to get nukes? What do you know about this? In this case, it's a dirty bomb, by the way, just to be clear.
Если вы вспомните события, которые предшествовали началу
If we recall the events before the special military operation, 2021, early 2022,
в это время Зеленский четко заявлял, что
Back then Zelensky announced clearly that Ukraine was planning to make develop its own nuclear weapons. That was one of the regions where the Russian Federation pulled the trigger on a special military operation. Yes, Zelensky has wanted to have this indeed serious leverage. And as for the activities of France, Great Britain, I think we should first ask the question, who is most interested in the war in Ukraine going on, never ending? The Russian Federation is really keen to end that war, of course, having achieved its goals. And the Trump administration is interested in putting an end to this war. And as for the European countries, I don't see that they're very keen to end that. They keep coming up with mad ultimatums, crazy demands. And I think it's the European countries who are the key instigators, the key warmongers here. And if my conclusions are to be believed, then it turns out that France and Great Britain's desire to give Ukraine nukes is a great explanation for everything that's been going on. They're basically giving Zelensky another trump to play.
You know,
keep fighting this war.
I'm thinking in this situation about who are these people in Europe? I mean, I know that they're bankers and that they want to be at war with Russia and that they make money from military contractors, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm curious as to what are the actual connections inside Ukraine? Are there actual advisors inside Ukraine from the UK, from Berlin, from Paris and all these countries in Europe? What's the relationship, for example, between the intel services in those places in Europe and the intel services that you used to be a part of in Ukraine? How close are they?
No. Можно, например, вспомнить о том, что сам президент Зеленский.
One can remember the fact that President Zelensky himself once paid an official visit to Great Britain, and after the royal reception, he went straight to the head of MI6.
Yes.
For a one-on-one meeting. I think that's the best example, confirming the tight connection between the Ukrainian leadership and Western special services. As for my personal experience, since 2014, something I've seen with my own eyes, the number of Western advisors, counselors, and instructors They were in the hundreds. I think there were hundreds of them, most different specialists, from sabotage specialists, diversion experts, to PSYOP experts, communications, electronic countermeasures, electronic intelligence, most different specialists from Great Britain, from France, from the US, from the Baltic countries, Poland, hundreds, if not thousands of them, permanently stationed in Ukraine, in the SBU, military intelligence, in law enforcement. They were everywhere.
So given that, the obvious question I have to ask you, because you know this, is, okay, so that's fine. People send military advisors everywhere. I'm sure Russia has people from other countries who are military advisors or maybe just associated with their military. So the key question to you is, were they just there as military advisors in the background, or were they actually leading the charge? Were they making decisions? Were they commanders? Or were they just in the background watching? That's what I want to know.
Смотрите, если мы сейчас углубимся в тему, например, диверсии терроризма,
которые deep in sabotage training and diversion activities that the SBU did in Donbass before 2022, striking actions like assassinations of Donbass leaders, Donetsk leaders, they were carried out with the assistance of international experts, mostly from the Great Britain. Those experts contributed to the preparations and they provided technical support. A striking example of that after 2022, after the beginning of a special military operation, is the participation of the British in activities on the Black Sea, in landing operations on the Crimean coast, in Kherson regions. And the Royal Navy and the Special Boat Service experts were involved in the preparation of those operations, and they were directly involved in them. The Ukrainian Marines operation to cross the Dnieper and capture the village of Krynki, which lasted for months and resulted in terrible losses for the Ukrainian army. It had been planned by British military advisors. Basically, they used that operation to practice Marine landing operations in new military situation, what with the development of drones and new artillery. It was all done by British special services. That's the first that occurs to me, the first examples. It was all with direct involvement of international specialists.
Sounds like they were up front, not in the back room. Yeah, that's important. Speaking of British intelligence, speaking of MI6, I want to ask you about something. Here's another story that's been in the news recently, by the way. Did you want to say something? Go ahead.
MI6 and specialists from Special Air Service.
MI6 and the SAS, the British SAS, they were directly involved. They were directly involved in the hostilities.
Well, then let me ask you this about MI6. Recently, there was a report here that was downplayed in the Western media, but it came out of the Russian intelligence services. And, you know, say what you want about the Russian intelligence services. I know people sometimes criticize it, but the thing about, since I've, as a journalist, been covering Russian intelligence and the Russian foreign ministry, they have their problems like everybody else. But I got to tell you something. What they usually are is very disciplined with their information. They don't say things just to say things. If they put out a report, I have found, maybe it's just the Russian nature, they've checked it three times. They've looked at it. They've dotted the I's. They don't just thump their chest and put something out there just to see how it plays. So if the Russian intelligence is saying they have reason to believe that there was a connection between this recent Russian intel officer who was a general in the Russian army, and they tried to assassinate him, and they say that those who tried to assassinate him had connections to MI6, and this report has gone all over the world, I can't help but ask you, would it surprise you to think that MI6 is involved, not in Ukraine, here in Russia, doing operations? And what kind of operations?
Смотрите, сейчас для западных спецслужб и в том
числе the Western special services, including British intelligence, it's a very convenient situation for them when they can do all kinds of operations in the territory of the Russian Federation. I mean, downright atrocities with the hands of Ukraine, of Ukrainians. All pretend that their operations are carried out by the Ukrainians here in Russia. It's absolutely convenient, very comfortable for them. Whatever happens in the territory of Russia, they can say, it's not us, it's the SBU or the Ukrainian intelligence. They can always put the Ukrainian proxies up front and tell people it's the Ukrainians who did it. I think in this regard, they are in a very comfortable situation. They can do whatever they want and always put the blame on their Ukrainian
subordinates. The bridge that was blown up in Crimea, the collapsed train derailment that occurred across the border, two other generals who there were assassination attempts on, here in Moscow, the planes that were part of the Russian nuclear fleet that were attacked. I've heard say that all four of those things were deliberately run or executed by MI6. Can you confirm that?
Я бы не сказал, что все, что вы перечислили,
Well, I wouldn't say that everything you just mentioned, all the operations
британских спецслужб,
но, например, в операции the MI6 is behind all of them.
Right.
But strikes against Russia's strategic aviation. Yes. I think, yeah, that is true. The bombing of the Crimea Bridge, probably the Brits may have contributed to that in terms of technical support. But you forgot one operation. I mean, the bombing of the Nord Stream. And here we should ask just one question. We protest. Who benefits from that? I think major benefactor is the United States and then the Britain. Completely tearing Europe and Russia apart, undermining the very foundation of Europe's economy. I think the US and Great Britain are the first to benefit from that. And when I hear versions that those were Ukrainian saboteurs boarding a yacht boat and then going to the Nord Stream, diving 300 feet deep and bombing
off
huge
a sailboat on a
pipes.
Sailboat.
Well, that's ridiculous.
I don't think so.
An operation like that can only be carried out by a highly professional frogman unit. And there are very few countries who can pull that off. Very few countries have units like that. And the United States and the Great Britain are the first countries.
It seems like Mr. Trump is losing his patience with this situation. And there's a report today on Axios that Mr. Trump had a conversation with Mr. Zelensky where Mr. Zelensky told Mr. Trump, give me at least till the end of the year to get this deal done. And Mr. Trump said, "Niet, no, nada. We're going to get that. You need to get this done by the end of summer." And then he even said, you need to get it done in the next 30 days. What do you make of that? And what are Mr. Zelensky's intentions that maybe we don't understand here? Is he serious that he could get this done by the end of the year?
Я верю, что господин Трамп хочет закончить эту войну.
I believe that Mr. Trump really wants to end that war. I believe there are forces in Europe and in America who really want to end that war. But I also believe that certain circles are still very strong that don't want the war to end. And it's not even about Zelensky, for example, it's about the military and defense complex of the West. It's about the political circles who are really keen to destroy Russia. I think those circles are still very strong. They still have a lot of influence, and they support Zelensky so that he doesn't end the war. And unfortunately, I don't think this war will end soon. because people who benefit from it are still too strong. And once again, going back to the issue of corruption, as long as there is Ukraine that's waging a war, and that these structures, these circles, they make billions. And of course, they are interested in this war going on, in this situation persisting. And they will do everything they can.
Yeah, it's almost like they're not incentivized to put an end to this because they're better off with the war than without the war. And who knows what's going to happen to Zelensky when this thing ends. Final question, and this is a personal question for you. Given what you and I were just talking about, that there are from time to time attacks on people in the military and people who are high ranking in the Russian authorities, I would imagine that you, being someone who has so much information and who used to be a part of the Ukrainian apparatus and have left that and are now openly and freely criticizing and telling its truths, do you feel vulnerable? Do you feel secure? Or do you spend time looking over your shoulder from time to time to make sure you're okay?
Well,
Rick, you know I have survived several assassination attempts. They almost succeeded during the last one in April 2024 when they tried to blow me up in my car. Well, I got away with an injury. Well, being afraid of them means actually admitting that they won and we hate losing. So, yes, of course, I am serious about my security. I treat the threats seriously, but I'm far from panicking. We will win that way or another. Yes, of course, I do look behind my shoulder, but I don't stop. We still continue our work.
You're a tough guy. And we appreciate you telling your story, sharing your information. I don't think there's anything more important. God's work is what I try to do. I try to find truths and share them. And I think that's what you're doing. I'm an imperfect guy, and I make a lot of mistakes. And when I do, I correct them. But here you are sharing what you know from a position that only you could probably be able to tell. So that's something that we appreciate, and I'm sure millions of people watching us appreciate as well.
Спасибо большое, кстати, за возможность донести
нашу. Thank you very much, by the way, for this opportunity to make my point of view heard. This is very important, and I really value that. Thank you.
Thank you, Vasily. Thank you very much, Lieutenant Colonel Vasily Prozorov. Wow. And with that, we put this one to bed, as they say. What a week we have had. Thank you so much for all of your comments. I mean, we literally have been reaching in the past, I think, 15 to 20 days, something like 6 to 8 million people who've been following, watching our shows, watching our coverage, starting with my conversation with Mr. Lavrov, through our conversations in Iran, through some of the interviews that we've been doing here now. And I just want to thank you for letting us into your homes and let you know that you can check in with me and tell me what you think. Tell me what we got wrong. You can reach me on YouTube. You can reach me on Twitter or X. You can reach me on BitChute. And you can watch our stuff now on Spotify as well. We're all over the place. My goodness. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thank you so much for letting us into your homes. And we'll be looking for you next time.